Welcome to Tripolar. I want to start by apologizing for background noise that you will inevitably be hearing. It was just too nice a night, and I had to go outside. Pretty amazing that I could record a broadcast that could be heard around the world throughout time from a porch, with a laptop and a microphone. Okay, so today I was supposed to have a guest. We had to reschedule. This is the first episode. It's not going according to plan. My guest had to reschedule. I don't have a co-host anymore. And, you know, it kind of fell apart, but I still wanted to record something. So, we're just going to record something. So, I want to make it a policy of my life that once a week, one of these bad boys is in the can. Okay, so what should we talk about? Fuck. Here's what we'll talk about. So for me, the best feeling I could ever get used to be when I was under the stars on an evening such as this with some alcohol in my system and a few cigarettes. So a couple beers and a couple cigarettes could take me to a place that I could never experience sober. It's hard to describe. I think it's like a mini sort of mania that I was able to launch myself into with substances. It wouldn't last long. It would probably last pretty much the duration of a few drinks and a few smokes. And if I could amplify the feeling by some good music. I will link to the artist I would listen to the most. His name's Jay Ralph. He's an orchestrator, a musician of extraordinary talent who is very overlooked. I could feel that way because of things that are weird about my brain, right? Now that I'm on antidepressants and mood stabilizers, a side effect of those, at least to me it's a side effect, is I can't get to that place anymore. I can't feel that good anymore. Now, it's true that I can't feel as bad as I used to feel anymore, which is probably a positive. But I can't feel that fucking awesome again. And that sucks. So, you may hear me drinking a little now. I am. This is kind of an issue that you run into with people who suffer from manic depressive illnesses, is that they get on medications, the medications work, but they want to stop taking them because they can't feel what they used to be able to feel, for better or worse. And, you know, a friend of mine is thinking about going on a mood stabilizer because he's clearly got a mood disorder. It's really fucked up his life in a lot of ways. And I was a big advocate of it. I very strongly recommended he do it. Side effects, no side effects, is what I said. And it's true. Except for what I just explained. So this is an interesting topic. Because it's a very specific topic. It's a very weird topic. But it's a good topic for a show that lost its footing so far. Before we launch into that, let me tell you about Harry's Razors. Harry's Razors, HARRYS.com. Harry's.com is where you can get Harry's Razors. They will mail you a ergonomically sound razor with a couple different cartridges, this cool little thing you put it in so you don't have to worry about cutting your hand if you were to put it in the little bowl with the toothbrushes. You'll go to their website, you'll see what I'm talking about. But HARRYS.com, Harry's as in what you will not be if you're using Harry's razors. I don't actually have a sponsor, but I decided what I'm going to do is just act like I do and just do free advertising for people that I like their products. And then maybe they will pay for it eventually. And I just won't tell you when it's real and when it's not. So, but yeah, Harry's Razors, good shit. You should try them out. Another thing I'm going to do is at the end of the podcast, I'm going to feature an artist. So I want to feature a product and a person in every episode that I think are worth looking into. So products, Harry's. Artist, we already got to him, J. Ralph. I'll link to his shit. All right, so back to the topic. When you go off a mood stabilizer, you're able to feel what you're able to feel again. I've done it a couple times, and both times have, not ended so favorably with relatives and friends and everyone saying I need to get back on them. And the last time I did it, I wound up in a mental clinic in Texas. And, and that helped me really gain perspective on my situation and get back on my meds and see my life in a different way. And I would say on the whole, I'm healthier as a result of listening to the guidance of others. But there's definitely a part of me that misses those extremes. I don't miss that deep depression so much, but I do recognize that it's what's allowed me to write things that I haven't necessarily experienced so accurately. Getting a phone call from the guy I was just talking about. How crazy is that? Not going to answer because I don't want to throw him on a podcast. But maybe we'll have him on as a guest at some point. So that's the dilemma when you have a manic depressive illness, is you hate it and you love it, if you know what it is to begin with. And in treating it, you're in a sense handicapping yourself because you're taking away an ability that you have to feel awesome. You're at least dampening the effects. When you have like a sports car, that restrictors. Putting like restrictors on it. You're saying that, yeah, the car has 700 horsepower or whatever, but we're only going to let it exude 500 of those horsepower because 700 is too dangerous. The car will fall apart. So that's what you're effectively doing. It's amazing how many metaphors you can make between cars and people. Kind of makes you think maybe we were invented by something. Different topic. Anyways, so what's the trade-off? The trade-off is if you want to live a normal, productive life, you got to have your shit together. You have got to be able to show up to a job. You've got to be able to do that job. You've got to be able to present yourself in what we would call a professional way. Professionalism is kind of a word we use to entail an unspoken cult that we're all designed to become a part of if we want to become a part of something profitable, something bigger than ourselves that has money in it. We have to be professional. You know, you have to be straight-laced. You have to, you know, I feel like we're just animals at the end of the day. We're animals wearing costumes. What's the difference between a guy who's naked and a guy who's in a three-piece suit? Same animal, different costume. If you were to see that same animal, you'd treat him very, very, very differently. If he was naked or if he was in a three-piece suit, you know what I'm saying? So, we've kind of institutionalized this branding of the individual where generally unwittingly we're conforming to societal norms, but we're conforming to unwritten rules that you have to wear a certain costume, literally. So, to work at a job, you have to wear a uniform. To go to a job interview, you gotta wear a suit. You gotta wear a tie. What the fuck is a tie? What is it doing? It's dangling off your neck. It's hard to put on. You have to do all these complex knots like you're a Boy Scout. And it just hangs there. It's not even holding your shirt together. At least a belt's, you know, holding your pants up. What's a tie doing? Tie's just, dangling. Just like a little pendulum made out of fabric that's, makes you look professional, I guess. I don't know. I mean, I guess it looks good because I grew up, you know, seeing it looking good. We assume it looks good. I think it's weird. I think if I was an alien, I came to Earth and I looked at people wearing these different things, I'd be like, okay, you know, I get the pants, you know, you're covering your legs, things could hit your legs, there might be a bug could bite your legs, you know, keeps you warm, great, pants make sense, shirts, pretty much the same thing for the upper half, yeah, I get it, socks, okay, cool, yeah, alright, shoes, oh, brilliant, shoes are a great idea, we have those too. What is that thing, though, hanging off your neck? And why do all the people in charge have them on? You know? It doesn't make sense. It's absurd. So many facets of our world are absurd. We just don't stop and think about them. That's what's weird about being someone like me, is that you think about it every day, all the time. You're thinking about shit like this instead of just experiencing life. And that's why, you know, when I've been high on marijuana, like really high, I feel like that's the only time I've really been out of my own head to the point where I can just experience life the way I imagine other animals do, a dog does, and a lot of people do. And I'm happier if I'm high. I'm a lot less happy sober. But at least with these medications, I have a baseline. I have somewhere I can spend most of my time. And there's some consistency, and I can kind of get along in the world, like I seem to be finally doing now. But yeah, costumes, man. How weird is it that we do that? Think about it. People in power always have a costume. And we respect that costume. Maybe unknowingly. Look at the Catholic Church, right? They wear costumes. They all wear weird costumes. The Pope wears the weirdest costume, and he's the most powerful. Who else wears costumes? Cops, right? You know, a lot of their stuff makes sense. Utility belts and boots and guns, and I get it. They wear a badge. They literally wear, like, a little shield that just says, hey, I'm a boss, right? If you see that guy, you got to do everything he says. Because he's got that badge on his chest. Some guy who's naked, you don't got to listen to a word he says. You call the guy with the badge and he'll lock him up. It's a very strange, strange world you live in, if you see it from my perspective. And you shouldn't. Shut this off, man. Don't even listen to this. But yeah, I mean, I just feel like sometimes I see the Matrix, you know, like I see the invisible fabric that's weaving our weird world together, and it's not that I don't like it. It's not that I think there's anything inherently wrong about it. I just see it, and I know it's there. Just lit a cigarette. I don't know if you could hear that smoke. Yeah, I see it. I just know it's there. But yeah, I'm kind of bummed out right now because I know I can drink this beer, smoke this cigarette. I'm not going to feel anything, you know? I'm not going to feel what I used to feel, which was just a sense of elation, this sense of being on par with the divine, this appreciation of life that transcends anything I could ever feel in sobriety, where I am just connected with the universe and I just feel, thank you, God, for this life. Like, I get it. I'm so optimistic. I, you know, it's weird. It's really, really weird. And to be able to, not just through substances, but just through everyday kind of situations or whatever it is that triggers these different modes of perception, it's weird to be able to see the world in such a drastically different way. And I think that's what's lends itself to, you know, I think that's why so many people with the specific problems I face, they end up killing themselves. And I could see where that comes from. I could see the appeal in that. If you never get a break because you can never trust what you see, because it's always changing the way you see it. where it feels like it was a delusion, but then it feels like it was true. That's a very, very vague way of trying to explain it, but it's like when you wake up from a dream, you realize that you were dreaming the whole time, and that was stupid. You know, you might have just been in abject horror, thinking that this tree monster is gonna swallow you and eat your soul. And you wake up and you're like, there's no tree monsters. I'm in a bed and I'm fine. And you're good. But what if you didn't wake up? It's real then, right? What's the difference? If you didn't wake up, or it's just the way other people see it, the other way other people see you, but you don't care. If you're in that dream and you run from that tree monster who wants your soul, that's your reality. And to come in and out of, I don't see tree monsters, but to come in and out of a dream like that is menacing to an individual. And to have dreams within dreams and never know if you're seeing the world the right way, not liking the guy you're looking at in the mirror, loving him sometimes, hating him sometimes, being ashamed of him sometimes. The plasticity of it is what makes someone want to just stop it. That's my theory, at least, as to why people with manic depressive illness tend to go over the edge. It's because they can't take it anymore. Hey, a deer. I didn't mean for this to be such a depressing show. I really didn't. I think that's why. Well, I won't get into that. But I hope this won't be a depressing show. And it won't be when I have guests. Unless you're depressing guests. You know, I feed off the energy of other people. And I'm able to create something through my dialogue with other people that's generally positive and inspirational and, you know, insightful. But when I'm left to my own devices, if I'm not in the best of moods, then this is what you get. And I'm recording an episode every week, so you can get this sometimes. Deal with it. Deal with it on your commute. Or shut it off, you know? Turn on a radio station. Listen to ads from them. Listen to them talking about what's probably much more bullshitty things than what I'm talking about. You know, we really, really distract ourselves from reality. And that is our reality, so it's not reality. But you know what I mean? It's like, I was thinking about sports today. I was playing baseball by myself. I was throwing pitches. There's a baseball field near where I live. And went to the baseball field, and I decided I'm going to start pitching. I'm going to teach myself how to pitch. I always wanted to be a pitcher. But, you know, the coach's kid was the pitcher, or whatever it was. I never got the spot, so I never developed myself as a pitcher. And I don't know. It seems fun. It seems cool. I like the mental game pitchers have to play, you know. It's like a chess match between the different batters and the way that people move on the bases. And, you know, it's a beautiful game, baseball, I think. And I was just playing it, and there's this kid, right? And he's with his dad. And his dad was, like, teaching him some fundamentals and, you know, in the outfield. And I could just kind of hear him, and he was being really rough on his kid, right? He was like, you know, how'd you drop that? What's the matter with you, you know? Get in front of the ball. Like, just, like, yelling at him, you know, over relatively meaningless stuff. I mean, he dropped a ball on the grass, and there were no stakes. There's not even a game going on. But the dad was genuinely upset about it. And I got to thinking, why do dads care, right? You see this all the time. Why do dads give a shit about how their kids are doing sports? These are games, right, that, you know, you say maybe you want your kid to be in Major League Baseball, be a football player, be a hockey player, whatever it is. Sure, there's a very small remote chance they might actually do that. If they even really wanted to, there's a very small chance they'd do it. They probably don't even want to. So why do we care? Why do we care how our kids do in sports? If they're better than the other kids who don't care what they're doing. They just know they have to try to win this game because it makes their dad like them. Here's the theory that I came up with while I was throwing pitches to an invisible batter. I would say half of them were wild pitches. Half of them would have been strikes. I'm being very generous. Maybe 15% of them would have been strikes, but that's neither here nor there. I think that dads are so tough on their kids when it comes to baseball because they're missing something in their life. They're made to feel powerless. And rightfully so. I mean, we live in a world where even in one of the best countries in it, one of the freest, relatively, supposedly freest countries there is, you know, you're still infinitesimally, I don't even know if I said that word right, but infinitesimally, I'm sorry, I shouldn't get wrapped up in words. You're way smaller than the big guys, people with the wealth, you know, people really running things. You don't mean shit. They call the shots. They live where they want. They do what they want. They get away with things. They drive cars you have a poster of. They fuck girls that you dream about. They, you know, there is definitely a class of people that you'll never be a part of. I mean, hopefully I'll be a part of them. Haha. But, no, there's a class of people most people will never be a part of. And that's the kind of animal inside of you saying, like, fuck. Where can I displace that anger? I can put it into a game because we're allowed to feel these things. We're allowed to express these things we feel through sports, right? It would be societally inappropriate for me to take a piece of wood and slam it on a tree, right? People would, again, the guy with the badge would show up, right? But if you're swinging a piece of wood at a thing that's firm in the air, then it's a game. It's cool. And it's the same thing, though. You're taking that anger and you're putting it into a game. And what it represents for the parents is their kid's chance at becoming something they're not. And of carrying on the legacy of it's like a miniature demonstration of someone's capacity to have power in life, I think it's all about power at the end of the day. Like, that's what we want, and that's what we're naturally hardwired to pursue. You know, Darwinian type of shit, probably. But yeah, it's like, if my kid can catch this ball and he can throw it well, he can hit it, then my kid can be better than the other kids. And that, to me, says something I made is better than what you guys made. And I feel good about that. Maybe that's a too harsh a judgment on baseball dads, but there's definitely some truth to it. And just truth to the fact that we turn these real concepts of competition and we turn them into sports and we institutionalize them and we have all our kids play them, right? They're playing each other, but they're practicing for life. They're not really learning about playing baseball. They're learning about life. They're learning that you have to always try to be better. And you have to work together with the people on your team to be better than the people on that team to win. And, you know, winning in this sense means having more points than the other team. There's a tiny difference a lot of times between the team that won and the team that lost. But what a difference in the result, right? In the feeling they have. I mean, think about it. Say there's a Little League game and one team has 10 points, 10 runs. The other has 9 and the game's over, right? The team with 10 points is literally fucking dancing around the field. And the team with 9 is hanging their heads in shame, walking back to their dads, who, you know, if they're proud, will put a hand on their shoulder and say, hey, you know, you tried, son. Yeah. And the other kids will be like, I'm proud of you, son. Like, what the fuck? I mean, what's the difference? 1 point. They both did the same job, except for a little bit. And one side feels horrible. The other side feels terrible. That's kind of like what it, like, kind of what it's like being bipolar. You feel one of those extremes. But why? Why do you feel so good that you had you got a little bit more of a point? You're both good at hitting this ball, or you're both bad at hitting this ball. You're just relatively a little better at it than these guys. But we take it so seriously. To the point people are fighting over it. People are, you know, standing because they can't even sit. They're dancing around. They're going bananas over sports. And you see it on every level, from when a little league game to a professional game is our ultimate manifestation of it. And it's like personification isn't the right word for it, but it's like personification, and that we're taking this abstract notion, this thing that we know is there but we can't express overtly, and we're channeling it into these games we've made up and these teams that just represent, I don't even know what they represent. They're not even generally like pro sports. The players aren't even from where you're from. They might not even care who wins, you know. They're getting paid a lot of money to play a game and to play it for the people who are paying them the most money. It's business. But we act like it's a battle between like our tribe and their tribe, and winner takes all. But it's so weird. We take all those things, these pent up things that we have to suppress under our suits and ties, right? And when we put on a different costume, a uniform to play sports, we are allowed to let that out in full force. As long as we channel it into the game, into the sport. Whether it's baseball or boxing or chess even, or whatever it is, whatever the game. That's where it goes. That's where it goes, is what we've decided as a culture. And there's nothing weird about that, we don't think. I think there is weird about that. I think things like this are so weird, and I'm always thinking about them. And, you know, I feel like I have pieces to a puzzle a lot of times, and it's bothering me that I can't solve the puzzle. But my whole life's like I'm trying to figure out the puzzle, whether it's a story I'm making, what goes where, you know, what people are supposed to feel when and why. And when. I don't know. It comes pretty organically for me, but it's like, I feel like in general, there's just things about the universe that I have little pieces to understanding, but I don't fully understand. And I don't even know why I want to figure them out. I don't know why I can't be like a dog and just enjoy life. I guess that's what weed's for, huh? What drugs are for. But, yeah, with the drugs I'm on, it stabilizes everything. So I can't feel things to the extremes I could without them. And that's good for living a normal life, but it's bad for, I don't know. It's just, you want to, it's human nature to want to take it to the max. And to want to feel things to the max. And if I know my max is being restricted, there is a part of me that is going to want to take those restrictors off, and will from time to time, I'm sure. It could be detrimental when you do, though, depending on your situation. So for anyone listening that has the same kind of debacle, if you take a magic pill that makes you feel or not feel things that you aren't supposed to feel or are supposed to feel, you want to be yourself, that's natural to have that desire and to feel that sense of unfairness, that clipping of your emotional wings, clipping of your mental wings even. It can really feel like you're doing a disservice to yourself or even to the world. But I think at the end of the day, you have to look at it through the eyes of people you care about. And look at the reality. I mean, do you have to behave a certain way to make it through life? Well, you're going to have to adapt, man, whether you like it or not. And if taking these magic pills makes you adapt, then do that. And maybe you'll find more joy and contentment and fulfillment as that guy or in that uniform than you would naked. I'm not sure I tied together these themes that kind of just emerged throughout the course of this monologue, but yeah, that's kind of what it's about, huh? For someone with a mental illness, drugs are uniforms that you put on that let you behave a certain way, appear a certain way, and be regarded a certain way. And if you're to stop taking those pills, you're taking off your clothes and you're naked, and that's not appropriate and that's not allowed, and that's why you get into trouble in life if you're naked. So maybe there's a way for you to get naked just enough, certain times. Space it out. I don't know. Find something to channel it into, like we've done with sports. Whatever that thing is about you that is not supposed to be or is not professional. Whatever that is, find a place to put it. And that's what I think I've done with writing and through this podcast even. I'm finding a place to put this angst and this baggage I carry with me. And when I'm able to displace it, I feel better. And I really advise anyone listening to this to keep listening to this is the main thing you can do. Then, you know, treat yourself, get a counselor, get all that stuff, all that good stuff. But obviously listening to this podcast is the best thing you could possibly do. And please support our sponsors. Okay. So I suppose this was the first episode. We'll make it a half hour. That sounds good to me. Tune in next week for my episode with Greg Goyens, who is the guest. He's unfortunately a little sick right now, and that's why we had to postpone, but he's going to be better. We're going to do an episode. It's going to be more upbeat than this one, I promise. And he's got a really interesting story that I haven't even heard in full. And I'm looking forward to hearing his story and letting you guys hear it. And, you know, seeing what happens when we put him and I on microphones and get those voices into your heads and see what happens. All right. Have a good whatever time of day or night it is for you. Bye.